Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Going to turn our attention to Aztalan. It's one of the really cool archaeological places to visit. And Cecil Schrader, one of several archaeologists currently working at the Aztalan site. She's a professor of anthropology at UW-Madison, connected with the American Indian Studies Program, the Nelson Institute of Environmental Studies, and the Center for Culture, History, and Environment. Cecil Schrader, welcome.
Thank you so much, Larry. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you with us today. You know, maybe you could talk with us. Give us a little history here first so people have some background. Talk about Wisconsin before, maybe before European settlement. How early were there people living here?
The first people came into Wisconsin somewhere between probably about 12,000 years ago and 13,000 years ago. So as soon as the glaciers were receding from the state, people were not far behind. Those early people hunted game. They gathered what little bit of plant materials were available. And they settled in a number of places, mostly around lakes and near quarries where high-quality stone was available for making stone tools. And people have been here ever since then.
What were their lives like those early days?
The earliest peoples were very nomadic. They moved around. They probably never stayed in one location for more than a few weeks at a time. And the earliest peoples probably didn't return to the same locations very often, although they likely had one or two places that were annual gathering spots where multiple bands, small bands of people, would gather every year or every couple years. But for the most part, they were the first peoples were exploring the landscape. They were really moving all over the place. And gradually, as they got to know the landscape better, and also as the environment stabilized at the end of the last ice age, then they began to settle into regions. And so by about 8,000 years ago, people were moving around areas that were several hundred kilometers in extent. So, you know, like around southwestern Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, sort of adjacent regions in Illinois. But they established camps that lasted for, again, a few weeks to maybe a few months. And eventually, by about 2,000 years ago, 2,500 years ago, people began to establish permanent settlements where they lived year-round. And all of this time, they're just living off the land.
Oh, and who settled the Aztalan area?
The Aztalan site is a really unique and interesting place in that there were local peoples that archaeologists refer to as late woodland who were living in the area. And then around AD 1100, a group of people that archaeologists call Mississippian came and settled at the same place and totally transformed the site from what was probably a very small encampment to a really large community with 300 to 400 people.
And so that's that was the size that it sort of remained for?
And it probably remained at that size for 150 years. By AD 1300, probably even a little bit earlier, 1250, the site was in decline, and it was certainly abandoned by AD 1300. And it wasn't occupied again until Euro-American settlers came and began to farm that land.
And did those people settle, did they move elsewhere then in the Midwest or what?
That's one of the big questions of every archaeologist's research is what happens to the people when they leave a site. We're pretty certain they didn't die. We think that they moved elsewhere, but in the process of moving elsewhere, their material culture, which is what we use to try and identify them, had changed enough that it's very difficult for us to say, all right, these people at Aztalan moved to this location.
Yeah. I would guess. What do we know about their culture?
The people who lived at Aztalan were part of a hierarchical society, a complex society that archaeologists refer to as a chiefdom, with a hereditary leader and other people of high social status who probably lived in houses that were a little bit bigger than other people's houses, sort of like today, and had material goods that were fancier, more exotic than other people, but they were all part of the same community. Some of the people farmed. mm-hmm. probably a good chunk of the year. Some people hunted, gathered nuts and other wild resources. So they kind of had a mixed subsistence practice.
And so it was kind of a division of labor almost?
Yeah, like? Yeah. And even the leaders probably labored somewhat, but certainly not to the extent that the common people did.
Our guest today, Cecil Schrader, who is a professor of anthropology at the UW-Madison, talking with her about Aztalan. There have been some recent discoveries there. She's done a lot of research in that area. Fun talking with her today. And have you ever visited Aztalan? I've been there. It's really a cool place to visit. How do you think about Aztalan and the people who live there? Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. So that kind of, how would you describe in terms of special or different? What was kind of special about that society in your view?
There's so many things. It's hard for me to pick. But one thing that was, I think, very special about the people in that society was a very rich ritual life. So lots of rituals, probably very spiritual people. The way in which they integrated that into their daily life, all of these elements were part of the site. And so we see areas like the earthen mounds that were the focus of ritual activity. We have an open plaza area at the site that was probably a place where public events were held, but also ritual activities were held. And one of the areas of the site that we are excavating, which is a gravel knoll, we found so much food, the remains of food on that gravel knoll this summer, that we think that was a location of feasting. So another kind of special event that was held in the community.
So is that what your research was focused on? Talk about your research more.
We were focused on two areas of the site that hadn't been really well investigated in the past in an effort to try and fill in the gaps in the community and how it was organized spatially. We know that different kinds of activities went on in different parts of this community, but we don't have the fullest understanding that we could have. And so we focused on the gravel knoll, an area that hadn't been especially well investigated, and then an area that was inside a palisade or a wooden wall enclosure just outside of the main site. An area that no one had really looked at, and we had no idea what kinds of things went on in that place.
Oh, so for somebody in your business, this has got to be really exciting.
It is. It's that sense of discovery. You don't know what you're going to find on any given day, if anything. And even if you don't find something, that then makes you think about, well, why not? What happened here that didn't leave remains, or was this a place that was totally ignored?
Talking again today with Cecil Schrader, professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She is a professor of anthropology at UW. Great to have her along as we talk with her about Aztalan and some of her recent work and some of the recent discoveries there. Raleigh in Oak Creek up with us now. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. And I think your guest probably knows this question is coming about the legends of the underground structures or pyramids in nearby Rock Lake and a possible connection to Aztalan. Wonder if you could expand on that. Thanks.
All right. I'm sure you're familiar, Cecil, with those.
The local legend.
Yes.
The features that are at the bottom of Rock Lake appear, when they've been visited by archaeologists, to be natural geological formations, to not be the product of human activity. Even though that legend is such a critical part of the identity of the community of Lake Mills, lending itself to the name of beer.
Well, so the legend is that this was formed by some peoples, and they may have been connected with Aztalan.
Different stories. I've heard different stories. I've heard stories that it was actually ancient people from Europe that came and built those mounds at the bottom of Rock Lake. And I've heard stories that it was people related in some way to the Mississippians that settled at Aztalan. But all of the efforts by archaeologists to replicate, to identify what is at the bottom of the lake have just yielded geological features.
So there you have it. We're probably probably that's what the. Well, it'd be kind of fun to, you know, as someone who you probably speculate on a lot of.
Oh yes, that's where hypotheses come from as a scientist.
Of course. Well, let's talk some more about the society itself. Can you? What all do we know about it?
You know, this is the fun thing about archaeology is that we're never going to know everything. Only a small proportion of the materials that people use during their lives are actually preserved over the thousands of years, or in this case, 1,000 years. And so we get just a small window of insight into what people's lives were like. The kinds of things that survive the best are the houses that they've lived in. Mm-hmm. All we find are just stains in the ground once we remove the topsoil, and those stains mark the posts that were set into the ground to create the structure. Food remains, both animal and plant remains, and technology, stone technology and ceramic technology. And so we have our greatest confidence when we're dealing with those kinds of materials. As we get, and those tell you sort of about basic aspects of human life, the things that everybody has to do to survive. And from those remains, we know that people built homes that would last for 5 to 10 years. They cultivated corn, probably growing it just outside the walls of the community of Aztalan. They hunted deer. They did a lot of fishing. They collected an enormous amount of shellfish from the adjacent Crawfish River and roasted the shellfish. One of the things that we found a lot of this summer were the mussel shells, the shelves that were thrown away after the little bit of meat inside had been eaten. And those, interestingly enough, mussel shell doesn't really deteriorate over time, as do most other remains.
So you had a really rich collection of those shells, and probably were able to at least speculate a little bit on what part of the diet those shells were. I want to talk some more about that. Cecil Schrader, our guest today, a professor of anthropology at UW-Madison, connected with the American Indian Studies Program and the Nelson Institute of Environmental Studies, as well as the Center for Culture, History, and the Environment, our guest. You have a question or comment, call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. I'll be back with my guest right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Wisconsin has such a rich and long history, and much of it happened before Europeans ever set foot on the North American continent. And today, we're learning about the Middle Mississippian Village. It thrived in Wisconsin between AD 1000 and 1300 at the Aztalan in southeast Wisconsin. Cecil Schrader is one of several architects, actually, archaeologists. She's an archaeologist, really, who is currently working at the site. She's a professor of anthropology at the UW-Madison, also connected with the American Indian Studies Program and the Nelson Institute of Environmental Studies, as well as the Center for Culture, History, and Environment. And Cecil Schrader, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Larry. It's a lot of fun.
And you are an archaeologist.
I am an archaeologist.
An archaeologist. Hopefully I'll get that before the end of the show. We have callers online, but there's an open line for you. We've had a question about what's going on over there, or maybe comment on your own experiences. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We have a link on my Facebook page, by the way, to the Aztalan State Park. And Yeah, it's worth a look. Take a look if you haven't seen what it looks like. I think it's kind of interesting. Daniel in Minang has a question. Hi, Daniel. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I have questions. How deep are the artifacts from the period of habitation? How well are the bones preserved in Wisconsin's acidic soils? And has the Mississippian culture been implicated archaeologically in human sacrifice?
Okay. We have three questions here. Probably you could expound a long time on those.
Well, thank you, Daniel. The archaeological site of Aztalan has artifacts at a variety of different levels. Most of the artifacts are probably fairly near to the surface. The site was plowed for many years, and so the plow cut into features that people were had created on the surface of the ground and essentially destroyed them, but the artifacts then got churned up in that top roughly 10 inches of soil. But then they excavated a lot of features deep into the ground, some features as much as 2 meters down into the ground, and filled those over time with a variety of materials. So you can find artifacts at a variety of different depths at the site. The perhaps it has something to do with some of the depth at which materials are found, but animal bone is very well preserved on much of that site. We even found very tiny fish bones, which generally don't preserve very well in acidic soils. In the upper layers of soil, we don't find as much in the way of bones, and those bones do look like they've eroded some from the impact of acidic soil, but the preservation of the bone was really quite good. The human sacrifice is another really good question. The Mississippian culture is really widespread across the southeastern United States, and there are a few rare examples of human sacrifice that seem to be, we think, related to war in some fashion or another, where an enemy is sacrificed and then their remains might be buried in the ground. There are some other kinds of examples of human sacrifice that are unusual that come from a site called Cahokia outside of St. Louis, modern-day St. Louis. This was the largest site north of Mexico, and the more than 100 earthen mounds were constructed at this site. Somewhere in the low thousands of people lived there, 10,000, 12,000, maybe up to 20,000 people at its peak. So it was really a city at the time it was occupied. And there's a mound at that site. It's called Mound 72, 72 of the at least 100 mounds identified. And excavations conducted there in the early 1970s by UW-Milwaukee unearthed a number of features that included human sacrifice. One of those features was a very large feature with several dozen women between the ages of 18 and 24 who had all died at the same time. And they had come from different areas. When archaeologists analyzed the carbon isotope content of their bone, as well as I think they've done some strontium isotope analyses, they were able to determine that these women had come from a wide range of areas throughout the Midwest and had probably been sent to Cahokia specifically for sacrifice to bring honor upon their community. We have some early historic written examples of human sacrifice among the Natchez in Mississippi, where the sacrifice was something that brought good fortune to the family of the individual who was sacrificed. And so the reasons weren't always related to war. There were some other possible reasons for human sacrifice. It doesn't appear to be an overall really common activity, but it did occur.
But it did happen. Mm-hmm. If you were to visit Aztalan, describe what you see, what people would see.
Well, if you took a bird's eye view, if you flew over the site, you would see this open grassy area with two earthen mounds, flat platform mounds, and portions of a wooden wall that have been reconstructed around the community. If you drive up to the community, it's actually really an awesome place to go and visit, because you come in and park at the upper parking lot, and you're at a high elevation looking down on the village. And
really cool.
It's really cool. You get this beautiful view of just how big the site is. You see portions of the wall that have been reconstructed and some of the mounds. And then as you move on through the site, you get different vantage points to the site as you park in different areas. And then you can walk around the entire site. There are paths through the site as well.
So is that how you would recommend? How do you recommend that people get the most out of their visit?
I recommend that they walk if possible and do a full perimeter circuit around the site. There are a variety of stations where there are interpretive plaques posted, and that really enhances the visitor experience. It explains some of the things that you're looking at and some of the things that archaeologists have learned over the years that they've been working there. Now, one thing I will say about archaeology that is always going to keep archaeologists employed is that there's always more to find. And the more you find over time, it forces you to adjust some of your interpretations. And so we're always correcting interpretations that were made 50 years ago, because we know much more now than we did then.
Do you have one of those wide brim hats and a bullwhip when you go out, or do you?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not afraid of snakes.
Excellent. Jim in the town of LaGrange, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. My grandparents lived in I call it Aslan, and they called it Aslan since 1920. For 25 years, beginning in 1920, they had a couple of uncles over there, and one uncle assisted an archaeologist from the university digging. They lived right next to the mound on the southwest corner. And I'm wondering why now everyone calls it Aslan, and everybody I ever knew that lived around it called it Aslan.
Well, there are probably a variety of ways to pronounce the word. It's a word that I think Nahua or Aztec, and that in that language it would be said Aztlan. So that would be one pronunciation. Local people probably really do have the corner on the accurate pronunciation for the region. But archaeologists come to the site from around the country and bring their different regional, I think, accents to the pronunciation, which has resulted in, I think, more people referring to it as Aztlan, sort of getting every syllable well-pronounced.
And Aztlan how did that term come to be for that site? I mean, there wasn't a sign saying, welcome to Aztlan or something.
No, and it's not a word that was in the languages of Native peoples in Wisconsin. In the 1830s, a man named Nathaniel Heyer was making his way across southern Wisconsin, and he stumbled upon this place along the Crawfish River. And he had been reading a book, probably something like the bestseller of the time, by Baron von Humboldt, on the antiquities of Central America. And there were illustrations in that book of flat-topped pyramids. Now, those pyramids are made of stone, but in the illustrations, it's not necessarily clear that you're looking at stone versus earth. And so Heyer, who had just been looking at these pictures, saw this site and saw these mounds that so closely resembled the pictures he'd seen that he thought there must be some connection. And then furthermore, in the book, it recounted an origin story for the Aztecs, that they had originated someplace to the north in a land that they called Aztlan. Today we know that someplace in the southwest, but Heyer thought for sure he had made the world's greatest discovery, and he had identified the ancestral home of the Aztecs, and that's why he named it Aztlán or Aztlán, and the name has stuck ever since.
Oh, very, very good. Tom in New Berlin has a question. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great, thank you for calling.
Well, my question isn't really as interesting as some of the others, but my experience with Aztlán is from the Crawfish River. And my question is, I have busted many a propeller shear on rocks in that river that seem to be purposely placed there. Is that something that was done by that tribe, or is that just the river?
Well, yes, Tom, that actually was done by the Mississippian peoples living at Aztlán. They aligned rocks in the river in a way that would force fish to kind of travel down a channel. And at the end of that channel, they could stretch a net across in order to capture a lot of fish in a very short period of time.
Huh. So they didn't use fishing lures on a bait casting reel or anything?
No. They did do some fish hooks where they, you know, would drop a line in the river, but the more efficient way of fishing was to catch a lot of fish in a net.
Is that how they caught the mussels as well, then?
No, we think they probably used tools or their hands to pull the mussel shells out of the river.
Interesting. Well, thanks. I appreciate the answer.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Did they bake or, you know, were breads or anything like that made?
We don't have a good idea about that. We don't find ovens, but we do find hearths. We find a lot of rock that appeared to have been heated. And so we think they did some roasting.
Mm-hmm.
And that they also cooked in ceramic vessels, perhaps by dropping hot rocks into the vessel. Or placing hot rocks into the vessel to heat the contents.
Excellent. Bill in Madison. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, it's a great program. I'm really enjoying listening to Dr. Schrader talk about Aztlán. I have real fond memories as a child. When I was a Boy Scout, we used to go down there about once or twice a year. And we used to play capture the flag between the different mounds. And our scout leader always told us that probably the Indian children or the young people used to play games similar to that. So I'm just have a kind of curiosity. Is there anything to show that they may have had some sort of a group sporting events that the Mississippi and the Indians might have played at a place like Aztlán?
Well, thanks for that question, Bill. We actually do find evidence of games. One of the games that they played was also played by historic Native Americans, and it's called Chunky. And it involves a biconcave stone, and we have found biconcave stones like that at Aztlán as well as other Mississippian sites. And this stone would be rolled down the plaza, down this big open stretch in the center of the community, and warriors would try to throw their spears so that their spear came as close to the landing spot of the stone as possible. And so a particularly skilled spear thrower could actually throw their spear so it would land just in front of the stone on its path and cause it to stop. And so that was a great game of skill.
That was Chunky.
And that was Chunky. They probably also played some other games with dice or small pieces that would be similar to some of the gambling games that are played today. But those are the major games that we're aware of. I'm sure that there were others that haven't preserved a material record as clearly as those have.
Hmm. Cool. Thanks, Bill, for calling. Appreciate it. And Mark in Manches, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi. Yeah, this is Mark from Manches. Hi, Cecil. My question was if you've done any thinking or studies on, you know, the climate change being a real possible driver for the people having to leave Aztlán, right? I read a lot of history. So I know there's civilizations in Angkor, Cambodia, Easter Island, right, Maya, Cahokia, that seem to peak, right, with a temperature peak about 1250, you know, and then we go into the Little Ice Age and Black Plague, some bad stuff happens. And I'm wondering if you've studied that, given it some thought, or if you think it would be plausible for an archaeologist or anthropologist to help answer that question.
That's wonderful, Mark. Thank you so much for asking that question, because that actually is one of my areas of research interest.
Great.
And we think that there are two kinds of climate change that may have had an impact on the people at Aztalan as well as elsewhere in Wisconsin. One of those is driven by the natural environment that you talked about, the sort of a warming trend followed by the Little Ice Age. That may have played a role. It seems to have led to a reduced population in the western Great Lakes, which would have been an area that would have gotten considerably colder during the Little Ice Age. But then there's also the local climatic impact or environmental impact of humans who clear large areas of land to build a community the size of Aztalan, and then agricultural fields, clearing agricultural fields to grow enough corn to feed those people along with the other resources that they are hunting and gathering. And all of those activities are going to have an impact on locally available resources. After a period of time, the amount of firewood may get reduced, at least in close proximity to site. And the amount of deer may become reduced over time, as it does in areas that get overpredated today. So the combination of those two things are certainly some factors to consider. We also think, though, that these were unstable political formations. And pretty much wherever you look in the southeast, you don't see these sites lasting more than a couple hundred, maybe a few hundred years. So we think that may have also played a role in the collapse of Aztalan and its abandonment. And finally, conflict. Mm-hmm. Negative interactions with other people in the area could have played a role. It does in other places. And so we see kind of a collection of different factors, and isolating which one is the primary factor is very difficult to do, but one that I would like to do.
Your research is going well, and you're happy with how it's going, proceeding?
Yep.
Just to get off the site, are there other sites in the Midwest that you would highly recommend for someone interested in early civilizations and archaeology?
Cahokia is a must to visit. This is a World Heritage Site. It's on the Illinois side of the Mississippi River outside of St. Louis. They have a wonderful interpretive center. They have extensive grounds that you can walk around. It's just a beautiful site, an absolute must visit.
Okay. Any others?
Around Ohio, there are earlier sites by an earlier group of people who built mounds called the Middle Woodland, or sometimes Hopewell, people, and those are very definitely worth visiting. A number of those are national parks. In western Wisconsin, there's the town of Trempealeau has a platform mound on top of a bluff in that site, and I think that is a park, county park perhaps. Mm-hmm. And then all around the Madison area, in fact, all over southern Wisconsin, are effigy mounds that were built by people who lived contemporaneously with the Mississippian people. They lived at the same time as the Mississippian people at Aztalan, but they had a very different set of cultural practices. And many of those effigy mounds are in parks, mm-hmm. city parks, county parks, state parks.
Or even the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus.
Yes. We have one of the richest varieties of cultural heritage and archaeological resources on our campus of any university in the country.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, are you going to be continuing working this summer at Aztalan or on and off?
We've finished our excavation. We will be doing a couple days of taking soil cores out of one of the areas where we spent a lot of time working this summer to help us get a better understanding of the natural geology and then the kinds of human activities that built up layers of soil on top of that natural geology. And then we have months and months and months of lab work.
And that, well, that could be fun too.
It could be. And it is, because you sometimes find things in the lab that you didn't see in the field.
So you put down the bullwhip and get out the microscope, and yep. Away you go. All right. Cecil, this has been so much fun. Thank you. I hope you'll will you come back and be with us again sometime?
Yeah, I would love to do that.
Love to have you back. Cecil Schrader, professor of anthropology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, our guest today as we talked with her about all the work going on at Aztalan. And again, the Aztalan State Park, I really hope you will take the time to visit. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. Tomorrow we'll talk with Marnie Memmingham about her book, Return to Wake Robin, a great book about the North Woods of Wisconsin. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.